From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. The documentary Collective follows a group of journalists in Bucharest who uncovered a massive scandal in Romanian hospitals that led to dozens of needless deaths. These were not reporters who normally covered healthcare or government, but rather sports.
You know, doctors and healthcare officials that thought they are, you know, the smartest guys in the country thought that these are just sports journalists, you know, asking some stupid questions and they will go away.
The journalists did not go away, and neither did the filmmaker who followed them. Alexander Nanau tells us about convincing the reporters to let him film them and learning that the government tapped his phone while he was making the movie. And he describes watching the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol from Bucharest. But first, we banter. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So Netflix hit 200 million, the magic number. I mean, a magic number, although it really didn't land with such a bang because everybody is now used to Netflix being so dominant. The pandemic certainly has helped with that. But that is a big number. And they are now telling us that they made so much money. They have between $15 and $16 billion in debt, but they say they're not going to borrow money anymore because they're making enough money to not only survive and make crazy amounts of new programming, but even to start chipping away at that debt. So that is a good day for Netflix.
Yeah, and that's the big takeaway. I mean, the 200 million was sort of a foregone conclusion. But from the beginning, you know, a lot of commentators, including on this show, we have questioned the debt problem at Netflix, where they've funded this astronomical run-up in content and subscribers by borrowing money to produce the shows and the movies. And the question was, will the money run out or the debt come due before they are able to be financially autonomous? And now they're claiming that they're going to be by next year. It's going to be neutral this year, and they're going to start paying back the debt next year. And if that happens, that is a fantastic marker for the long-term viability of the Netflix business.
Yeah, right now, the only thing that's in the universe of maybe becoming a competitor is Disney Plus. Reed Hastings, the co-CEO of Netflix, said he is very much looking forward to competing. And maybe he said we're very fired up about catching them in family animation. I'll believe that one when I see it. That's a tough
good
one.
Luck.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, the competitors are lagging. And it's not going to be easy. We have seen a report from Deloitte talking about churn. Churn is a real disease that the streamers face because, you know, in the past, it was seen as people were willing to pay for three streamers. Then it ticked up to five, possibly because of the pandemic or because of the advent of all this new competition. But there is a point where people say, you know what? I saw the thing I signed up to see and bye, I'm out now.
Yeah, this study suggested that 46% of people had canceled a streaming service over the past 6 months. That's a gigantic number. That's almost half of users. And if you think about it, I mean, that is the long-term threat to this business of streaming content, because if people are going to jump around and surf to their favorite services to see a particular show and then cancel right after, you're going to have a hard time amassing the kinds of subscriber numbers that Netflix has. And if you're Netflix, of sustaining that number. And it's just become so much easier to cancel a subscription service these days than it was in the days where you had cable or satellite and there was a box, you had to have a guy come to the house. I mean, these days it's a couple clicks and you're done. And there is a real problem here. If the value proposition isn't there long term, then you're going to see people opt out. And that's why I think you're seeing these services lean into not just advertising one show. They're now looking at, like in the case of HBO Max, where they put out a trailer for their entire 2021 movie slate, which is all the Warner Brothers movies. They're trying to tell you, no, 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 it's not just Wonder Woman. We have movies coming every couple weeks that you're going to want to see. And Disney did a whole presentation for investors and fans where they laid out movie after show after movie into, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, because they want that value proposition to be there for people. So it's not just The Mandalorian and then cancel.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I think people keep Netflix at this point. It's just become so fundamental. I think that's the last one that gets canceled, which, you know, they had the field to themselves for a long time. They built their brand, and congratulations to them. And in terms of Warner Brothers, I will note, yes, they are offering those movies. It would be very interesting to see they churn out after people watch Wonder Woman. There's a lot of good stuff on that site, a lot. But still, it would be interesting to see. And we have talked in terms of movies being things that are less sticky in the past, you know, less sticky to viewers, less engaging. I meant that more emotionally. I don't have any science to back it up. That was just a feeling that I had. But in the context of this study and this issue, the throwing of movies at a streamer seems to me to be a riskier proposition, and you don't get to keep people around as much if they're not engaged over a series of nights or weeks, as is the case with Mandalorian, which they don't just drop all at once. So we're going to have to see the evolving strategies.
Well, or you're Netflix and you put it out there that you're going to have 70 original movies on the service in 2021. I mean, that is pretty impressive. And maybe most of them are garbage. You know, the Netflix movies haven't really been up to the theatrical level typically. But if you're hitting that many hits, you're going to get some home runs. Or at least triples or doubles.
Yeah, but I feel like if I don't know what it is and it's brand new to me every single time, that is just less engagement. And I will also note that Warner's can't promise you that all those movies will be on their streamer because they didn't have deals with their partners and they have made some deals. Denzel Washington is said to have gotten a staggering payday for The Little Things, which they painted themselves into the corner on by announcing that it would be on the streaming service day and date with its opening in theaters that are closed. You know, that's acknowledged, but they didn't make a deal. So they paid him as if that movie was going to be a giant hit. Denzel Washington doesn't play when it comes to this stuff. You know, his rate is his rate, $20 million per movie and my back end. And they paid him a lot of huge tens of millions of dollars, I'm told. So there are other movies. They don't have a deal with Legendary yet for the Denis Villeneuve movie Dune. They are still fighting over the James Wan movie, as far as I know, which they don't own. I mean, I heard Lana Wachowski is very opposed to the day and date for the next Matrix film. So we'll see. But still, you know, this is the strategy and this is the gaping maw of the demand for originals. It was a frustration going back, Matt, that Netflix wanted to advertise the service more than the shows, but now only more so.
Yeah. And I think it's only going to get worse. I mean, we're seeing the new Paramount streaming service launch in March. They just announced that release date and they're going to have something splashy on that service when announced. There's some speculation they might put the Top Gun sequel directly onto Paramount Plus or day and date. That would surprise me, just given Tom Cruise and his love of theaters. But this is only going to become more and more competitive. And the churn issue is going to haunt these streaming services, you know, forever, because there's no going back. The customers are used to the ability to cancel, and they're not going to, unless we see a mass bundling of all these services where you got to keep them all, and there could be that down the line, but for now, they've got to each justify themselves every month to all their consumers, and it's going to be difficult.
I will note just still, I think a lot of the studios will hold the line, and there's a lot of talk that Disney will put Black Widow on the streamer, but I am told it's because there's a tease if that happens. That means if they don't get Black Widow out, they will mess up the release for the future Marvel mega movies that they do want in theaters. So still the picking and choosing. And yes, I too would be surprised if Top Gun ends up on the streamer, but I wouldn't rule it out. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The documentary Collective begins with footage of a 2015 fire at a Bucharest nightclub that immediately killed 27 people. Scores more were injured and taken to Romanian hospitals, some with what should have been treatable burns. But in the coming months, 37 more people died from horrible infections. Others were left disfigured. An outraged public took to the streets and ultimately forced out major government officials. The following year, director Alexander Nanow embedded with journalists at a daily sports paper as they worked to uncover how things had gone so horribly wrong. Reporter Catalin Tolentan and his colleagues were learning that a company called Hexi Pharma was providing hospitals with disinfectants that had been heavily diluted and were ineffective, leading to deaths from preventable infections. As director Alexander Nanow points out, that storyline may sound familiar to fans of classic noir films.
It is very much like In the Third Man by Carol Reed, right? In the Third Man, the main character, Harry Lime, played by Orson Welles, is selling diluted penicillin in post-war Vienna.
Nobody thinks in terms of human beings. Governments don't. Why should we? They talk about the people and the proletariat. I talk about the suckers and the mugs. It's the same thing. They have their five-year plans. So have I.
Nanow says he first read about that Third Man comparison in a German newspaper. A few days later, the similarities seemed especially eerie as the corrupt head of disinfectant manufacturer Hexi Pharma met the same fate as the villain in The Third Man.
Harry Lime, once encircled, decided to commit suicide. And 10 days later, Dan Kondra committed suicide. So we were a bit,
Nanow's film Collective has won accolades around the globe and is an Oscar contention for Best International Film and Best Documentary. Nanow was also set to get a special award from his home country, but he has rejected it.
Basically, I was going to get a Medal of Honor for my contribution to the Romanian culture during the pandemic, but we are in a not very happy situation in Romania with the cultural sector that has suffered during the pandemic, and there were no mechanisms like in the other European countries to help the cultural sector, and most of all the film industry. And our film center, that is obliged by law to organize 2 times a year financing rounds for the producers, didn't do it at all during 2020, but also, you know, independent theaters and much more institutions that are independent are really on the brink of bankruptcy. And I couldn't do that to my colleagues in a way, you know, pretend that I get a medal because the culture during the pandemic in Romania is fine. It is not fine.
Mm. Frustrating. And talking about the financing, you know, you were doing a film that a lot of people in the establishment in Romania might not have been too crazy about for a lot of reasons. And is it financed by Romanian funds?
It is partly. I mean, that's how European film production works. And basically, it's an open contest. If you are one of the productions that gets the fund, it means that that is basically a credit that you get from the Romanian state, and they are getting reimbursed by the film production as any other co-producer, basically by participating in the revenues.
And there's no politicization. Some of this makes us look pretty bad. So maybe we don't want to do this, or it just somehow is separate.
Because we wanted to do an observational documentary to look at the relationship between power and citizens at this very tense moment in Romania, we thought it would be just the perfect way to show that through the eyes of investigative journalists. And we approached them, but one has to know that Cătălin and his team were well-known journalists in Romania, but they are sports journalists, and they were investigating before only in the sports world, and really brought down sports ministers that had to go to jail, big football bosses that had to go to jail. And for the first time, because the people had the trust in them, whistleblowers started coming to them from the healthcare system.
Yeah, I want to pause just a second there and say how remarkable that is, that this sports journalist, because, you know, you look at it and go, you're sports journalists, and yet you're exposing this gigantic scandal that has nothing to do with sports.
You know, for sure, it's strange that they are sports journalists, but in a way, it was also an advantage because nobody took them seriously. You know, doctors,
right,
and healthcare officials that thought they are, you know, the smartest guys in the country thought that these are just sports journalists, you know, asking some stupid questions and they will go away.
Mm-hmm.
But they are very, very professional investigative journalists, and they knew exactly how to go further. Sources continue to come to them, and then they really did what you see in the film.
Yes, so but this was not an easy yes to get to film this process of these sports journalists becoming investigative journalists more broadly. They didn't just say, yes, sure, come over.
No, on the contrary, they rejected it. I mean, we had a first meeting, which, you know, we presented what we know because we also had our own production development team and we had our own sources inside the system. But they said, we are really sorry, you know, newsroom has to stay a protected environment. We have to protect information. We have to protect sources. So sorry, no. But I told Katalin back then, like, listen, I understand the point, but please, if you feel that there's a chance to change your, you know, your openness towards that, and there is an investigation coming that you think is noteworthy, please let me know. And at a certain point, then he called me and said, okay, listen, we have thought about it and we are onto something. We don't know if it's going to lead anywhere. Maybe it's huge. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe we are really on the wrong track, but let's try. And basically only very late after we published the film, he told me why he and his colleagues decided differently from the beginning. And they thought that a young generation is so much abandoning press and is turning towards social media that maybe it is a good way of showing through a film how the press works. For sure, at that time, they didn't know what a storm of revelations and corruptions will come their way. And luckily also our way and our film team's way.
And at that early phase, where is the financing coming from?
At the early phase, it's always our own investment. Basically, we start investing in a shooting process where we test, is there a story? Are the characters that can carry a story and are cinematic enough? And as with my last projects, I have a strong partner in HBO Europe. And we also had a strong partner in the Luxembourg company called Samsa Film. And so we basically put our own money in the beginning. And then you start basically pitching the project at pitching forums around the world and try to get other financing sources. And so one of them was for sure the Romanian Film Institute, but also the Sundance Film Fund and television station from a broadcaster from the Switzerland, one from Israel.
Goodness.
Yeah.
International. You know, the first part of the film really captures this, as a journalist, I would say, that you does some investigative things, you know, the joy of having a team and you're working together and you're getting these revelations. And it, you know, it reminds me of, I don't know, All the President's Men or Spotlight in that way, that mm-hmm. that hunt, you know, where you're really onto the story. And at a certain point, you know, in those films, not only for the journalists, but for the filmmakers, in the case of Spotlight, certainly, there comes a point where, you know, it gets scary because you're getting close to big, powerful people. And I wonder whether that was a thing for you, because I think you felt like your phone was tapped. And so how do you manage that?
Right. I mean, one has to understand that this journalistic investigation really became one of the biggest investigations in Romania since many years. And that meant that everybody was focused on it and the state institutions. And I knew through a source that my phone was taped. But the things were happening so fast and everything became bigger and bigger that basically we were just concerned to be professional, to be able to capture what has to be captured to tell the story. But what we for sure did was also we took care on the production side that our footage will be safe after every filming day and will be in places that are hard to find and in multiple places.
Coming up after a short break, Alexander Nanow talks about staying up all night watching the assault on the U.S. Capitol from Bucharest, the capital of a much younger democracy. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Romanian director Alexander Nanau about his documentary, Collective. The first half of Collective follows a group of journalists working to uncover a years-long scandal in which a company sold diluted disinfectants to corrupt officials at Romanian hospitals, resulting in dozens of needless deaths from infections. Following a national outcry, the government changed hands. At that point, the focus of Nanau's film shifts away from the reporters to a new health minister committed to reform. And I'm going to try to get his name, Vlad Voiculescu. Have I got that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Vlad Voiculescu.
Yeah. Voiculescu, okay. He comes
Perfect.
In yeah. and you pivot. Now you're following him. And he is very defiant of a system that is trying to stifle reform at every single turn. And I guess, does he decide to let in the cameras as a safety measure almost for himself?
Yeah, I mean, he was a special case, let's say, because he was basically from outside politics. So he was not a politician. He was not linked to any political party. Basically, he was somebody working in a bank in Vienna, but at the same time, in his free time, he was a patient's activist. And so they named him also in order to absorb the anger of the Romanian society towards the healthcare system. And I knew that it would be the best and most interesting thing to try to get into the system and film the same story from inside this, you know, cave of corruption. And I hoped to find a partner in him, to be open. And so when we finally met, he said, listen, I believe in transparency. And because he also had brought a young and very professional team, they all encouraged him. And we agreed that for sure the rest of the institution will hate us to, you know, that we dare to come with a camera into this health ministry. But then he should never tell me to stop the camera. And I will always ask people in private meetings if they are fine to be filmed. And if nobody objects, then we keep filming.
I mean, what happens in Romania, you know, is an election where it appears that you have people who are just doing everything they can coming into power to undermine this guy, you know, creating this issue about why isn't Romania doing this kind of surgery, which seems to be something, you know, an appeal to kind of an appeal to nationalistic pride. Why aren't we doing this when you have an ongoing scandal about something, you know, that shows that there are major shortcomings in the system? So that's quite sad. And I wonder how you feel about what is going on in your country in the aftermath and what you're seeing on television about what's going on in the United States.
Oh, yeah, that's a complex question.
I'm aware. I just doubled up on that one.
Yeah. Romania is a young democracy and it's still in the process of becoming. You know, Romania became a European Union country in 2007, but still it is a former communist country. So politics and politicians still have, you know, they are populists and they make promises every 4 years when there are elections and people mostly fall into the trap. And then what they do most often is they steal the public funds and do not build roads and do not modernize the institutions and so forth.
That sounds familiar to me right now. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, you know, I learned a lot because in the beginning we thought that's a Romanian story we're telling, and we, in a way, we also felt you know, we have to tell the story. But while we were filming in 2016, what happened was the year 2016 basically made the whole world transform into the world we were just filming. You know, it started with Brexit. It went on with the campaign of Trump. We had Duterte in the Philippines and many more countries that were preparing for the takeover of populists and right-wing leaders like in France, Marine Le Pen. And so we understood suddenly that it's the whole world. It's really transforming into what we are filming. But in Romania, it was also, in a way, the fire and what happened afterwards and the press revelations and the fact that one person, a doctor, had the courage to blow the whistle and start this avalanche of uncovering the lies of politicians, basically started also a change in the society. So slowly since then, you know, we had a really bad time when the Social Democrats, which are the former communists, came back into power and tried to dismantle the state institutions, beginning with the judicial system. And then people understood, voted, and basically now we have a much more center-right government in place. And the social society became as strong as it never was in Romania. And it was the civil society that basically, you know, built a hospital in Romania from scratch just in 2 years with money they got from donations from everybody, from citizens. Mm-hmm. And they got, for example, a $250,000 euro from the band Metallica that put their money into this hospital just to demonstrate to politicians that it is possible to build hospitals. It is a lie that you cannot build hospitals.
I did not see the band Metallica being part of this interview, but go on.
Yeah, no, they have this foundation and they're really, you know, very engaged in
good for them, like yeah.
So right now, for example, Vlad Voiculescu 2 years ago joined a new party that is a reformative party, and they have won, I don't know, maybe 15, a bit over 15% in the last elections, and they are now in the coalition government with another party, and Vlad Voiculescu since Christmas is again Minister of Health.
Wow, that is good to hear. And what about here in the U.S.?
We had a very hard night when it happened with the Capitol. We were petrified. We watched it the whole night, couldn't believe it.
Talking about the mob attack on the Capitol. Yes.
Yeah. You know, in a way, I'm somebody who says I do understand people when they vote, let's say, against an establishment because they feel that it has forgotten about them. But what we have to understand and to learn is that populists are not the answer, because as we see in Romania, populists can dismantle a democracy very fast. And you have experienced it in the States now. It takes just one term to destroy the almost the oldest democracy in the world.
So do you feel that hopeful for this country or as a watching from Europe, or do you think there goes the United States?
My biggest question was, how is it possible that state institutions that were obliged to defend the capital and who for sure knew what will come were not there? How is it possible to let the capital be attacked by citizens that might kill the Senate? So something is not only wrong in the way people were encouraged by the most powerful man in the country to be violent. The problem is that democratic state institutions didn't function. And that, I think, tells us that they are already infiltrated in a way that is really dangerous.
Alexander Nanal is the director of the documentary Collective. Thank you for joining us all the way from Bucharest.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's the business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream the business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on the business.